Are we ready this time for the Mountain Bike Podcast presented by GMBN number 15?
Yeah.
I'm here this week, Neil Donoghue. Over there in the red shirt, Steve Jones.
Yeah. Italian theme going on this week.
Is that right? Well, you've just been to Italy.
Me and Jack has been to Italy. Summit to sea. We didn't know how far we were going, how much climbing or descending. We got 15% into the trip and used 40% of the time.
Bit of a monster, that
yeah,
was.
Yeah, we were with some former downhill riders. Fabian Burrell, ex-World Downhill Champion.
I remember him.
Scott Sharples, who strove for Trek.
Did, back in the day.
Yeah, and a crazy skier from that famous downhill tunnel of Leger called Nico Antonios. He's a bit of a boy, wasn't he, Jack?
He's very wild, that man.
Yeah.
Jack is behind the camera this week with a microphone, so he can give us his pearls of wisdom. And
or maybe a bit of Frank Sinatra.
Yeah. That's not happening.
Come on, Jack.
No,
be shy now.
Sing the theme tune.
Like the theme tune.
So this week we're talking.
I did it more. Come on, Jack. You singing it last week.
Not happening.
Not happening.
Back to Italy, Don.
Italy, we're talking about Val di Sole, where we had a double header. We had downhill and cross country.
Was it a triple header?
Well, I suppose it is. We cross XC short track as well on the Friday. I like it. I can sit in the office at work on a Friday afternoon and watch a bit of racing.
And it is exciting racing. But women's downhill, Don, it's been decimated, right, this year with the
injuries all over the place.
With, you know, Miriam Nicole, Tani Seagrave.
I think Miriam Nicole is on the way back.
Yeah, I see her. Bit of a riding down a bike, didn't she?
Yeah, she's done
a few
laps. Yeah.
But it really has crippled that category, right?
So Rachel Atherton snapped her Achilles at Leger, the last round, a few weeks ago. I think we must have talked about it in the last podcast.
We have talked about it, but the point is that when you look, I mean, congratulations to Maureen Cabirou for winning the race.
Yeah.
You know, a massive, massive 11-second win from Tracy Hanna.
Let's talk about that quickly. Why are you... Well, that's a big gap. Do you think Tracy Hannah's thinking points game already? We're just over the halfway through the season and she is leading overalls, which we'll talk about more in a second. But
yeah,
it was a bit of a surprise to see Maureen win by that much over Tracy.
It was a huge win. I'm looking at the numbers here and I've got to stop because it's down as an 18-second gap to third place. But I'm sure it's more than that. I'm sure it's almost 30 seconds.
So from Tracy then back to third place, Camille Blanche, 18 seconds.
Yeah, you know, that's a huge margin, right?
I mean, a big gnarly track. We haven't talked about a track at all yet.
Shall we talk about the track?
Well, it's one back in my day. We'll go back to these old stories again.
Mm.
But
when did you ride it first?
It was a while ago. We raced European champs there, probably 07, 08. And it was one of those, I was quite good technically. And I remember people saying, oh, you'll love this track. There's no pedaling, it's really technical. I showed up and I hated it, always hated it.
Why?
Just because it was really dangerous. It was like, I know you said it's not steep, but it's at the point of like, you're always picking up speed. You're never just chilling or you're always braking hard. And it's just so wide, it's taped so wide and there's horrible rocks everywhere and you can't see them because of the dappled light. The roots, the dirt. So it always felt like you were a second away from a massive crash. Mm. And people did. It's where Cedric really hurt himself.
Oh, that was a really bad crash, wasn't it? That's because he caught a tree with his brake lever.
But yeah.
And he had no brake. He went down through this rock section. That was a life-threatening injury.
It was like a broken pelvis
He got flown to Trento. He was there for quite a while. But going back to what you said, Don, there's no time to chill on that track, is there? It is intense from start to finish, just rock and its roots. And I'll stick to my words. It isn't actually that steep. Everyone says it's the most steepest technical track on the circuit. When you get to the lower slopes of Val Nord, that is steep.
Yeah.
And it's but the thing with Val di Sole is like, you know, I've heard loads of the top riders say over the years that, you know, like even like Sam Hill and Steve Peterson, I can't hold on to the handlebars.
Because it's relentless. And you saw
Hold on to the handlebars.
Did you see, was it Brosnan came across the line shaking his hands?
Yeah.
You couldn't really tell if it was just like gesticulating what had just happened or if his hands were just really hurting him.
Yeah. But and I think there's a specific bike setup for Val di Sole.
Lots of spaces under the stem.
Yeah, I think so. And I think higher rise bars, maybe your bars maybe pulled back more than you would normally because... Yeah, your body's taking a huge amount of a beating, each of those rocks and roots all the way down the hill.
So what do you think that is? Is that people trying to keep the balance almost to the back of the bike and use their legs more to save their arms, or?
I think so, because, well, obviously, if you can't hold on to the handlebars, and when you go into those last corners, because it actually gets a little bit loose before you break into the field, and there's some loose rocks, and what you don't want is to be weak when you're on loose chip-ins, because you're going to go down. You're going to go down. I mean, and people do go down on Val d'Isola. Do you know what? Funny story, Don. I'm going to tell you this. Jack, you're going to love this one. So yeah, I'm sat in the kitchen. This is the weekend just gone by, because I got back. I was traveling. I got back. So I watched Val d'Isola replay. And I'm watching, and there's an interview with Gwyn. Warner interviews Gwyn. You know, he's out to the broken thumb. So Warner's asking why about all that. And then I see that the qualifying was wet and some of the top riders placed badly. And then I'm watching the finals, and then... And then, obviously, you know, Bruni and those guys come down early. And then Warner says, oh, yeah, you know, maybe they're taking the same idea as Tani Seagrave. I'm thinking, hold on, Tani Seagrave wasn't racing. So basically, I'd watched last year's final. But it panned out. The thing is, right, if you watch it, it comes down to Laurie Greenland, and he takes the lead. And it's the same happened in 2018 that happened in 2019.
Wow.
It's absolutely mental.
Well,
spent 2 hours watching.
But what a fucking half-wit. Jane was laughing. Jane was laughing right off.
Well, it was a brilliant win from Laurie Greenland. His first ever World Cup downhill win. Mm-hmm. He's a local boy, almost to GMBN Towers. He lives sort of 50 miles away in Bristol.
Yeah.
So plenty of people here in the office, as you do, know him very well. Well, and I've seen him grow up.
I took him on one of his first road trips, actually. Funny story.
There we go. There's
so
a,
Jane...
There's a trend with this one.
So Jane, my wife, said, look, you're going to wait. Remember, he's only 16. She goes, whatever you do, don't give him any booze, right? So we go to pick him up in Bristol. His dad drops him off, and he gets in the back of the van. And the guys, I won't mention who they are, first thing they do, give him a 4-pack of Stella, right? I'm not sure we should really talk about this, but...
Is Stella going to tell him to who it is?
No. But then Stella turned to Guinness, blah, blah, blah. This is probably not a very responsible podcast.
Very unresponsible, yes.
Yeah. However, going back to Laurie Greenland, he was always going to win a World Cup race, right?
Yeah, I mean, probably at Val d'Isola as well, to be fair, from what we've seen in the past.
We said 2 seconds there before.
It was the World Champs, wasn't it, where he came second?
Can I go back to the booze? We just thought he needed a bit of bulking.
Classic.
Bit of bulking.
Bulking.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, he's still not very big now.
Oh, he is. He's a bigger guy now than he was.
Well, funny enough, actually, we've talked about Laurie with Ollie Beckinsale, who's been in the podcast, because the guy who Ollie's in business with trains Laurie, actually. So over at their shop, they've got a training facility, and Laurie trains with Andy, I think his name is. Mm. Yeah, so great to see him take his first win. And things were changed around quite a lot because there was crazy thunderstorms in qualifying. Mm-hmm. So when you watched the Rebel TV, you saw some names on there you're not used to seeing. And actually, a lot of them performed really well, although it was almost anticlimactic because they weren't coming down and knocking people off. Mm. They were coming down and probably having their best results ever.
Yeah.
So some really great rides.
Like Jack, you know, Jack Redding, he did pretty well, actually. But
David Palazzari, who gave the horns as he's about to leave the start hut. And I said to my son, who's only three, I was like, watch this one. I think we might see a crash. Because I don't want to badmouth David, but someone who qualifies really well for their first time ever, I mean, I've done it. You think you show up and you see the, you know,
yeah,
it's all or nothing, basically.
Yeah, we've seen Ed Masters do it at Fort William.
Yeah.
Goes down.
A great result. He got 12th, actually.
Yeah. And so the man in jeans.
13th.
Von Klemsenberg.
The denim destroyer.
So in the top 15, there is Forrest Riesco, those two guys, David Palazzari and Von Klemsenberg, and also David Trummer, who are all unsponsored privateers.
Mental.
Three in the top 15.
Yeah. Going back to Laurie, right? So he's 22, won his first World Cup. Josh Briceland, Danny Hart, they didn't win their first World Cup till they were 25. So he's above schedule, I think. I mean, you do have the likes of I'm talking British riders here, obviously, not kind of riders from other countries. But Giathen, he won when he was 18, I think. He won in Schladming.
Schladming.
Thank you, Jack.
Well, I remember that day as well.
Yeah. And I guess he now joins a quite a big list of British riders who've won World Cup Downhills, right? Like your colleague from
Mark Beaumont. He won Val d'Isère.
He did indeed.
Gnarly. Well, it was dry, but it's always gnarly. He legit won that race. Very spectacularly.
Yeah. Can I talk about Amaury Peyron for a second?
We still came fourth.
Yeah. But I was talking to a few guys last week, some top French racers. I'm not going to say who it was.
Fabien Barel.
Well, no, I was with Fabien. I was with quite a few top French racers last week. And some of them think he's actually pushing the risk game a little bit too far.
Laurie?
No, Amaury Peyron.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Because when you see that run Leger, it was wild, wasn't it?
But funnily, I thought his Val d'Isère run looked a bit underwhelming.
It did, didn't it? It did. I'm wondering if someone had actually told him, look, you need to back off a touch here because you're going to go down.
Yeah.
And it did look, it looked a bit stiff. It looked a bit pedestrian,
to be honest,
didn't it?
That is a very mature ride. If that is the case, to back it off and come forth is a pretty good way of doing it.
Yeah, totally.
Well, it's a very good way of doing it.
But some of the other, I mean, I think Danny Hart could have actually won that race. It was so bad luck he had a puncture. Mm.
Right at the end, wasn't it?
I agree, but there's always someone, and I'll say it this time.
Here we go.
Rider's mistake, puncture, rider's mistake.
Right. Oh, crikey. Now, there's a feature in that, Don. There's a GMBN feature in that. Are punctures rider's mistakes?
I would say probably yes, most of the time.
Who punctured last week in the Molini when they didn't have to?
This big man over here.
Jack,
I puncture a lot and I break a lot of mechs.
Oh, Steve, I'm sorry, Steve. Oh, Steve, I'm really sorry. I didn't mean to go over that knife-edged rock as hard. Actually, I didn't mean to land on that knife-edged rock.
Well, I've seen it before. Also, myself and Blake did a massive ride around Somerset. What? How far was that? Like 80 kilometres.
It was a big ride.
Fortunately, it was in the last 2 kilometres. Jack broke a mech off.
Jack did actually break a mech as well.
I did
last
ask Pete, our mechanic, if we could order some new mechs and
Jack's
get some
mechs.
Greg Minard. Greg Minard went down
also,
when he was in the lead. Insane.
Plus 7 seconds for seventh place.
Yeah.
Again, we can't, you know.
He'd have been podium, right? He definitely would have been podium.
He would have accelerated his lead further down the bottom, wouldn't he?
However, it's like the puncture thing, you know. If my auntie had it, she'd be my uncle.
Yeah. That's very true.
You know, it's racing. Let's go low and lower.
I could be you, you could be me. That makes sense.
I mean, it was a great ride from Minard, don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't win it, he crashed.
Yeah.
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 But what I thought, right at the bottom,
it comes
the
wisdom.
People seem to have made a lot of time up on that last left, right, and then the straight into the finish line. It's like some people were, that last split is quite close to the bottom, and some people were on like 1.4 up or 1.4 down, and they'd come into that last, well, straight, and they'd be sprinting their ass off, and they'd still make up time.
So my question is you, Jack.
I think
Jack,
that last bit must make up. If you get it right, it must make up half a second.
So, our wisdom pundit in the background here, what wins Val d'Isère? What's the essence? What nails you that race?
Sam going Hill. The fastest, probably, Steve.
As you know, talking about Sam Hill, I think Sam Hill's run is still one of the craziest runs I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And he's still, like, if you replayed Sam Hill now, it would look as mental as ever.
There's
it?
A couple of people went inside on that corner. Brooke Donald, someone else.
Laurie did it.
Did he?
Yeah,
I was going to say
it was a little bit. Not as inside as probably Sam.
I was going to say that Brooke looked, again, a little bit underwhelming. You think, whoa, look, he's gone inside. Oh, it didn't make any difference on time.
Do you think it's fitness that wins the race?
You're going to be strong. On that track, probably, you have to be super strong. But then you look at the size of Brooke and then you look at the size of Laurie. And
what about
Don, maybe you simply weren't fit enough to ride the track. That's why you hated it.
I don't think you need to be...
Three people talking
strength.
In a moment.
Yeah. I don't think you need to be a certain strength. I think you just need to be lean enough and strong enough for your own body weight. You don't have to, I don't know. Laurie doesn't have to lift as much as Brooke to be a quicker rider down that sort of a track. Because he's not holding up as much weight as Brooke would be.
What about David Trummer? Going off, changing the subject slightly. David Trummer has had a brilliant
season. I think you should answer Jack's question. Maybe you should get him down. Okay, guys, you should get Laurie down versus Brooke McDonald. Who can do the most press ups? Is it as simple as that? Is it as simple as that, Jack?
I don't think it is, no.
Okay, back to David Trummer.
He's had a brilliant season. He finished, what was it, sixth?
Yep.
And sitting overall, he is 10th. That is pretty incredible. Someone who...
Well, he's got a SRAM ride, I think, hasn't he? SRAM YT or something.
He is YT's top rider.
Yeah.
I'm presuming, you know, next to his name, there is not a UCI registered team. So as far as I can tell, that means privateer, although he is riding with support from YT and SRAM possibly. But incredible season, really. He's had an 18th, 15th, 59th. So that's dropped him a load of points. But a 7th and 8th and an 8th in the last three rounds.
It's not bad.
And the series now goes to...
Next round is in Lenzerheide next weekend, which is one of the easiest tracks, we're going to say, of the season.
I'd say, yeah, but then the conditions of the track make it quite hard because it's all that gravelly, loose stuff, and you could easily wash and easily ruin your race run in.
Lenzerheide would be my worst nightmare, whereas Val d'Isère is one of my favourite tracks I've ever ridden.
Yeah, true. I agree with that.
I would hate to ride Lenzerheide.
Have you ever raced Val d'Isère?
Yes, I have. Okay. Yeah.
I was going to say, normally it's a different matter of riding versus
But like, it's Lenzerheide, it's quite good to look ahead, isn't it, to the race coming up. I mean, Greg Minnaar has been really strong there. Look, Bruni's been really strong there. Mm-hmm. Greenland won his world championship there, is that right? I think.
I don't know, actually.
Junior? Yeah. Did he?
At
At Lenzerheide. Is that right? Anyway, there's some people that do well at Lenzerheide and some do absolutely terrible.
Predictions?
I reckon Greg will get that podium or win that he's been looking for, actually. And I think a load of people are going to go down in a ton of dust at Lenzerheide. But who's going to take... It's could be a turning point. I mean, Bruni and Pierron need to keep on their bikes.
True. And do you think this will give Laurie Greenland a bit of wind beneath his wings and it'll be...
Do a Danny Hart.
Well, or you mean like wind between his wings like Brennan Fairclough at Leger?
Mm.
Where was Brendan on the weekend?
Well,
27th, I think he was.
Yeah, sort of back to where he was before, I suppose.
Jack, comments on that? He doesn't want to upset Brendan, basically.
No, I don't have a comment. I don't need to comment. It's
Brendan, Jack has got your back. Just because he's a local, Jack.
Yeah,
right.
Let's move on
to the cross country. So, started with short track on the Friday,
which
it rained heavily before the women's race, and it looked pretty tough going because it's mainly grass. A lot of drifting going on and sort of dried out a bit before the men's. It looked like, you know, when the mud starts sticking and almost started to get worse for the men's race, if anything. But Yolanda Neff took another win in the short track. So looking super strong. Sinna Free in second. Pauline Ferran-Prevot in third. Ferran Prevot's had as we've talked about before, actually, a very good comeback from an injury right at the start of the season. She's really sort of worked hard to get back there and looking great.
How come Kate Courtney is in 10th?
So Kate Courtney did not have a great weekend in the short track or in the main race. I think I saw on her Instagram thing that she doesn't particularly like riding in the rain. So, but you know.
Well, the main was dry.
Exactly. So when it came rain to Sunday, it was actually very hot and dry. So who knows there?
Maybe she's just cut from.
It's been a tough season. She's been doing really, really well.
Elite men?
Well, Matthew Van der Poel, who that's his second short track win of the year. Had a battle with Avancini for quite a lot of the race. Actually.
Don, I got to say to you, how come Nina Schurt is in fifth place? Like, had he done too much training the week before?
He doesn't really like pushing himself for the short track.
Okay, let's move on to the subject a little bit later then.
Well, Nino actually asked him this question about short track, how it's changed things when we had a lovely lunch at his house in between the training sessions.
Yeah.
And he says if the win is there, he'll go for it, but he's not gonna really, you know, work himself too hard if
you
there
get
isn't
some points.
He wants to. It's really important. It's a World Cup win. There's half points, so it's a pretty substantial amount of points for that race. But it's not worth himself emptying himself to try and beat someone like Van der Poel or Avancini, who do really well at short track, just to try and win. But if the win is there, he'll go for it. Were his exact words.
Is there any different bike setups for the different events?
Well, they have to ride the same bike.
Right.
So they'll pick whichever one they want. And there's a bit of a mix. We still see more hardtails in the women's race than in the men's.
Yeah.
But whatever you ride Friday on, you've got to ride Sunday on. And Vanderpool actually rode his Canyon Lux both times. So short travel, 100 mil travel bike. And I think almost all the men were riding full suspension bikes.
So the cross country then, that was quite an exciting conclusion, wasn't it?
Yeah. So like I said,
the women's especially, there's like...
Yeah, a hot race, and it looked like Yolanda Neff with a lap left was had it wrapped up. She had a 30-second lead on I think Jana Balamoina at that point. But then Pauline Ferrampo made a big effort, come back, and caught her up on the last lap and outsprinted her. Basically, it came down, you know, Ferrampo was leading into that sort of last corner, but that she outsprinted Yolanda Neff. So great win for her.
Yeah. Don, personal question for you. I seem to see you riding a lot of cross-country bikes in the last year. Are you leaning more towards that sport
in
now?
The last few years, actually.
Right, okay. What's the word? Am I imagining it, or is it actually
no,
true?
No, I really enjoy it.
Yeah.
I've definitely become a big fan of the racing, so I actually really appreciate the racing now.
Well, it is exciting, isn't it?
Yeah, and for me, I like ragging a little bike around. So I've now put, for BC Bike Race, I've sort of trailed it out a bit. I put wider bars on, shorter stem, bigger fork. Mm-hmm. So it's moved a bit more to the extreme end of things. But it's a great bike to really work hard down the hill, and you can fly up the hills on them now. It's such a light, capable bike, that Canyon Lux.
Yeah.
That
must have been quite an insight for you then when you, I don't know if you've talked about this on the podcast before, about going to see Nina Sheridan doing training with him. Have we discussed this?
I did briefly with Si.
Right.
We did the Tour de France one.
Yeah.
But yeah, the video's just come out yesterday.
Yeah, it's definitely worth a watch, that is.
Yeah, have a look. There's been a few questions that actually we should have answered in the video, to be fair, we didn't.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are saying that Nino's only doing half squats and they're taking the mickey out of him. Basically, he said to us, he only does half squats. It doesn't go all the way down below parallel because you don't do that on a bike. You don't bend your knee that much. So, and you'll also see that in the video, he sort of does a squat, and on the way back up, he tries to do it as fast as possible.
So what weight is he pushing on a squat then?
He was doing 130 kilos. But that was after our circuit session.
Yeah.
And then he does five reps.
5 reps. No, yeah, 5 reps, 3 sets, I think.
No, other way around. Three reps, 5 sets.
3 reps, 130 kilos.
But as soon as you've done the squats, you go over and do that big jump onto the block. So really explosive.
Can you squat 130 kilos?
No. Well, actually...
He's probably the same size as you, right?
He is...
65 kilos?
No, he's lighter than I am.
Right.
He's completely ripped, as you'd expect.
Yeah.
But actually, in my injuries... make it more difficult to squat, should I say. My right ankle doesn't bend very well. And
your leg doesn't bend.
And my left leg is
wrist.
Still... No, it doesn't really
back.
Work. That's the first squats I've done since my leg injury.
So what squats do you push then?
I can't remember what I would used to do before injuries, but then I was doing it in like 60.
Yeah.
Like nothing.
I think you went up to 70 at one point.
Possibly.
Right.
Blake's a big guy.
Blake did 100.
Doing 100. So Nino Sheridan's doing 130.
That's insane. I mean, Blake's shoulders are like this.
Yeah.
Well, and Blake can only do 100. That's mental, isn't it?
For Bear a guy, mind,
he's squatting more than double his body weight.
And then we had lunch, beautiful lunch in Nino Sheridan's house.
What did you have, actually?
Pasta.
Right.
A bit of... What's that salad? What's that salad? Anyway.
Dessert?
coffee from his very fancy machine.
Yeah, yeah.
And a bit of chocolate.
What's his house like?
Very nice.
Really?
Yes.
This is in Chur, right?
It is.
Right, okay. You had chocolate as well? Chocolate. 85% or what?
Yeah, it was British.
And he gave us some 100% cocoa chocolate, which was...
I didn't have that. It's gross.
Interesting.
I've had it before.
God, Jack lives the life, didn't he?
But...
Well, I work hard, Steve.
He did. But going on to the race, the men's elite race... All that was not good enough for Nino to take the win.
All that GMBN prep.
Yeah.
Crikey. Third place, 53 seconds back.
That's another thing I was going to answer. That was a legit training session. We were very lucky that was one of his most important training sessions of the year in that gap between races. And he was like, yeah, you can come and film it, but this is my session.
Yeah.
We can't talk. We can't.
Yeah.
So we basically tried to copy what Nino did.
I'd love to have a go at that. really. I would genuinely like to go.
It was really hard. Well, I felt very, very sorry for those boys. They were.
But anyway, on to the cross country.
Whatever you do, make sure you watch it. Don't just listen to it.
Yeah, do it. Check it out. Watch us suffer.
There's a race.
There's a group of three of them on the last lap. So Nino, Matthias Flückiger, and Matthew van der Poel. And they all sort of exploded. Nino did go to the front and looked like he tried to put a bit of an attack in, but it just wasn't to be. The other guys swamped him straight away. Van der Poel just bombing off the front of the pack, as he'd done in the short track. The speed he went up that climb was breathtaking. He virtually did the same thing after an hour and a bit's racing in the cross country. But actually, Matthias Flückiger, I thought, was really impressive.
Yeah, he dropped Schurter.
He dropped Schurter. And really, it's those guys that are looking like they're in it for the overall this year.
How old is Van der Poel?
He is young. Let me have a look.
One or two?
Whoa, I'm sure he's, crikey.
Might even be old. He might be a couple of years older.
Yeah, I'm not going to be able to find that very quickly. Right. But he is super young. Obviously, he's a bit of a phenom. As Rob was saying on the live feed, his granddad came second at the Tour. His dad won stages at the Tour.
Really? Wow.
Family of very special cyclists.
Yeah.
Who we expect to see go to road after he's probably won the Olympics next year. In the overall, let's start with the ladies. Yolanda Neff is now winning the overall from Kate Courtney, who, like we said, didn't have a great weekend. Mm-hmm. She was 10th in the short track, 17th in the XCO.
How many points away is she in second place?
Not a lot. 18, right. 33. So Yolanda Neff has just squeaked out a lead. Ann Terpstra in third place. Pauline Ferrand-Prevot up to fourth. And Taiba fifth. So things get tight, to be fair. Third to fourth. And in the men's, Nino is still leading from Van der Poel, even though he's missed one race so far. And we know he's missing the last round at Snowshoe. I presume he's racing Lenzerheide this weekend.
Surely Lenzerheide's got Nino Schurter's name all over it, isn't it?
Well, it's like 20 minutes down the road.
What's his reason for missing Snowshoe, do we know?
I think probably just the case he's just he can't race that much and recover. So that's his reason. Well, that was his reason for missing round three in Val Nord, I believe. But that this weekend was the second time this year that Van der Poel's gone 1-1 for short track and for XCO. Yeah. So when he's on it, he is on it. And the way he drops, exciting stuff
in that.
Yeah. So like we said, on to Lenzerheide next weekend. Looking forward to that. Where are you going, Steve, this week?
Oh, crikey. I'm actually not too far down the road. Me and Chris are doing a 3-day e-mountain bike race around Mont Blanc. 360 kilometres. Apparently, there's 280 kilometres of single track.
Wow.
So it's a pro-only, invite-only race. So I'm actually quite interested to
And you got an invite?
It's a fair comment. Yeah, I got an invite because I'm not sure e-bikes and racing goes hand in hand, but in terms of an adventure around Mont Blanc, that is unmissable, right? It's something I've always wanted to do.
Probably show a lot of them up with the climbing. Some of the stuff I've seen you climb up is pretty impressive.
Have you seen the old Matt Hunter Tour de Mont Blanc video?
I haven't seen that, actually.
It's good.
Right, do that.
Yeah,
it's another but one. But yeah, pretty full-on trip. What about you, Dan? What are you up to? You going to Whistler?
This podcast is slightly short because, well, we're all busy, but I'm packing bikes in a minute to go to Whistler tomorrow.
Whoa. Oh, tomorrow?
Tomorrow. Mm. And for plenty of cool stuff, taking a downhill bike. First time I've ridden downhill bike in 5 years.
What are you taking?
Brand new Nuke-proof Descent.
Mm.
And also there is the Endurable Series from Whistler next weekend. So we'll be doing the podcast. Jack is off.
I'm going with Chris Opie from GCN.
He's going high level though.
To go and film him racing.
Mountain bikes.
Mountain bikes.
Did I hear you say, you talked about some altitude numbers earlier on.
Yeah.
Did I hear you say
14,000 feet of climbing.
Above 10,000 feet?
Above 9,000 feet. Still above 9,000. The Leadville. Below 9,000.
Leadville 100. That is a race that actually Lance Armstrong has done in the past.
He won.
Hopefully we'll see him.
He came second once and won.
Make sure you heckle him if you see him.
I tell you what, in terms of physicality, I think Jack has got been dealt the card this week. That's going to be brutal, Jack.
Well, I'm driving, I'm not riding. Holy crap, I'm not doing that.
Right.
No way, I'd die.
That's it.
That's it. Wrap up the podcast.
You better join pack us. Your bags.
Pack of bags. You can listen to this on YouTube, watch on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, iTunes, Deezer, Audio Boom, all those places. Get on it. There is now 16, 15. I've said it at the start. I've forgone already.
15.
See you later.